Okay, we can try to see how much of Hagolas Kelim we can try to finish in the next couple of days. So a lot of the sugyas of Hagolas Kelim we have talked about in passing in other parts of your day, so we'll a little bit review some of those dakudas and try to put things all into the proper perspective. So the sugyas of Hagolas Kelim really appear in two different places. They appear a little bit in the end of Masechta Zohar, and then both of them appear in the second paragraph of Masechta Pesachim, particularly in the context of Kasher and Kelim for Pesach, which we'll see have some similarities and some differences. The basic klal of Hagolas Kelim is pretty clear. It's presented already in the Mishnah, the end of Masechta Zohar. I think Gemara Pesachim has it also. It all revolves around the two principles of Hagolah Libun, that depending on what use the Kli has, that's how the Kli has to be kasher. So that's what the Mishnah says, that anything that's derech, the mishtamish with it on the fire directly, requires Libun, has to be kasher through the direct fire. Anything that was done through water, through liquid or something, would have to be kasher through Hagolah. So we'll try to speak a little bit about what exactly is considered to be Adei Eish, what exactly is considered to be Adei Mayim, just what some of the differences are between the methods of kashrut per se. So this klal that appears in the Mishnah, seems to be based on psukim, whatever comes out, whatever goes in to Eish comes out to Eish, whatever goes into Mayim goes out to Mayim. It's not exactly as ironclad as the Gemara and the Mishnah the Gemara presents. There are certain exceptions to this rule, certain situations where, even though the B'liya was al yedei Mayim, you may still require Eish, and there are certain cases where the B'liya was either Eish, so maybe Mayim is going to survive. The klal is true, but 95% of the time. What are some of the exceptions to this rule? So one of them we spoke a lot about earlier on in your day, and that was the issue of a B'liya they had with the Teir Bala. The Gemara at the end of it, Azar has this idea that if something was Nivla, it was a Teir Bala, the original B'liya was Devar Mutar, so then this distinction between Eish and Mayim no longer plays a role. Then there's never going to be a requirement of Libun. So even something which was a Bliya Idea Eish, it was a terrible, it's going to get away with just Hagolah. Why exactly is that? So we presented the popular approach to this problem. This dilemma is based on the Rashba, the famous Yisrael of the Rashba, and said in so many different times and places. But the basic Yisrael of the Rashba is that when you have something which had a Bliya Idea Eish, so when we say that Mayim is not effective to get out the bliyas, it doesn't exactly mean that. It doesn't mean that the Mayim is nothing. It just means that the Mayim can't get the whole bliya out. But the Mayim can weaken the bliya. It can create this middle category called the Tam Kolosh. And what is the significance of Tam Kolosh? That's what the Rashba developed. So you said that Tam Kolosh is still a problem if it was a Dover Osir. If it started out as Chaz or Nevel, etc. So then Kozman, that there's any Tam left, even a Tam Kolosh, that's a problem. Therefore, Hagolah is going to be halachically ineffective, something that had a tam ayyadei ha'esh, because Hagolah is just not going to get the whole tam out. So it's going to be maklish the tam, and that's not going to help us. But when you have a terabola, so then the isser hasn't taken effect yet. So, Kozmat, the isser hasn't taken effect yet. So then you're in business. So then doing Hagolah on something will weaken the tam, will create the middle category of tam kolosh. And as tam kolosh, when the zmana isser, or the circumstances of the isser come about, there's not enough time to become also because the Issa can be chal on the Tam Kolosh. So that's how the Rashba is razzle dazzle bihar. And again, the Rashba is shittasa by not the whole picture of the shittasa Rashba. So the time we pointed out that not everyone agrees that his Rashba, not everyone agrees that his whole mahalach about a Teira Bola. Particularly, there was a machalikis of Rishon, and we also mentioned about Rabbi Riku Shnifa. Part of the Rashba's whole theory, a part of really the Gemara's whole source for this idea that you can get away with Hagolah on something which originally had a bliya de eish, was learned out from Kachim, because when it comes to the parish of Kasher Kalim, of Parsha Tzav, so the Torah always speaks about Marok Shikha for Mayim. There's no mention of Libun, which the Gemara and the Rashba follow suit by saying, of course there's no mention of Libun, because that's a terabola. Because when you cook the Kachim in the pot, when you burn them and you're grilled on the Kachim, you made a Kachim hamburger or something, so that was a terabola. Since it's a terabala, the Torah wouldn't have to mention Liban. There's no need for the Liban because Hagolah is good enough. That's all assuming that the Mariko Shtifa is taking place before the Isser of Nosa was Chal. Because according to the Rashba, the whole idea of letting you get away with Hagolah is you're preempting the Isser from being Chal. If the Isser was Chal already, even though it was originally a day you had there, that's not going to solve the problem according to the Rashba's understanding. That happens to be Machlokes Rishon, the Rambam and the Raivin. It's a big question. It's not so posh that that's even true, that the Kasher and Mariko Shtifa takes place pre when it becomes Nosa. According to other Rishon, you do Mariko Shtifa after it becomes Nosa already. If you do Marikos Shni, if you have to become those already, then obviously this has nothing to do with the Rashba's theory. There's some other theory behind it. So what's the other theory? There is no other theory. It's excessive cost. That's the way it is. The Terebol is different. But it doesn't really matter whether right now it's Isra or not. If at the time that the original Bliya took place, it was a Terah. So Zozai. So the Terah was Mekel. Terah said you can get away with a cheapy form of kashering. So again, we're not exactly sure why there's a difference between Heterabala or Isurabala, but we're pretty comfortable that such a distinction exists. Even the Rashi was long this, or just in the realm of Xeris Akasa, whatever it is, it seems to be correct. The question is, what are the practical implications of this? What are some real examples of Heterabala versus Isurabala? So we spoke about this also. Most of us, Nebuchadnezzar, when we say Ram, we're not kashering Kalim with the Beis Mikdash anymore, so Mikdashtipa doesn't speak to us. So the only possible case of Heterabala that speaks to us, one is Basa B'cholov. Namely, if a kli became a fleishitz, and now you want to kasher it to make it parv again, in order to use it for milchitz, so whether you should or should not be doing that, that's another story that we also spoke about. There's a minig, the Magen Avraham quotes an old minig, not to kasher things at whim, but again, there are some exceptions to that minig. Sometimes we override that minig. So if you're kashering something that's fleishitz, and you just want to make it parv again, there's no b'lias of isser, so that's a classic etera bola. The post can point out, and Kivegi and others point out, that even if it has belias of fleishes and milchiks in it, but if the belias were never bevasachas, if the belias were never within 24 hours of each other, that's also considered to be a terabola. If you cook fleishes, then now a lady cooked milchiks in, and now you want to kasher it, it's treif, that's not called a terabola, it's called a surabola. So then, depending on whether it requires leave it or not, depending on how the belias happened in the first place. But if it just had a belia of fleishes today, and then nothing happened for a week, then has a belia of milchiks tomorrow, next week, even though they were both through a grill, they're both a da'esh, that would also presumably be called a heterabola. So a heterabola does have a little bit, speaks to us a little bit. A heterabola may also speak to us in terms of chametz pesach also. Also, again, the topic, I told you we spoke about these things, little highlights. So we spoke a lot about whether chametz pesach is a heterabola or a surabola. So this was a big machlok kisim rishon, 2 days in Taisus, whether it's a heterabola or a surabola. What's the issue there? So we also mentioned that on the one hand it is a terabola because you're allowed to eat chametz before Pesach. On the other hand, the Ramban has this famous law that Shema Allah, that chametz is called chametz the rest of the year. So that leads us to believe that it's not exactly the same as a regular tea. It's not like noser. Before something becomes noser, you wouldn't say, well, it's noser just that the zman hasn't come yet. That's silly. You wouldn't say about, I have a fleshy pot. So it's really a bas v'chol pot, it's just that the milk hasn't come yet. So that's a foolish way of talking. But when you have chametz, so yeah, it's chametz. This pizza is chametz. Just not Pesach yet. So that's it says on chametz on the box of matzah. The whole yalom it says chametz, not for Pesach we use. So you see that people think about chametz on yalom. It has a shame chametz on it. So the Rav had a brisket for it. Added a knesh to this by saying that since there's a din chametz in the mikdash on yalom, so that's what creates the shmuelah. The fact that the oilam calls it chametz on yalom, that doesn't really matter. The fact that there's a shame chametz in mikdash, that's what creates the shame of chametz alom. So no matter what it is, machlokes is 2 days in Taisus, machlokes is 2 days in the Ramban, is chametz considered to be a terabola or a surabola vis-a-vis these dinim of the imach? How do we pass in halacha? Do we pass in that chametz is a terabola or a surabola? So we try to be machmer on this. That's what the Ramah writes. That we try not to follow that cool of saying that chametz is a terabola. If you held that chametz is mamash a terabola, so then you can kasha everything with hagol. It would be very, very easy to kasha things for Pesach. Too many things that would have needed libud could get away with hagol. So we try not to follow that view. We try to be chayshesh for the shita that chametz is considered to be Easter of all. See, the moment why we sometimes fall back on that a little bit once in a while. So again, so we have a basic cloud that appears in the Mishnah and the Gemara, that what goes through fire comes out through fire, what goes in through water comes out through water. But it's not always true. The terabola surabola could throw off that equation a little bit. Then you have in other directions where the equation may get thrown off, and that's in terms of a klicheres. So a klicheres, the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Pesachim that a Torah ida klicheres and yatmin the dafil yoylam. The Torah says in Parshas Tzav that the kli nechoshes bushola, the borak b'shutaf b'mayim. But if you want to cut shem in a pot, so it's a metal pot, kli d'chayshes, so you could just kash it, finish, do hagala on it. Im u'b'kli cheres, but if it's in a kli cheres, u'kli cheres ashev u'shavo, you shaver, you have to break it. Why do you have to break it? Why can't you kash it? So, well, it says the reason why you can't kash it is the Torah just told you that that's not going to work. that a Torah either of Klicheres and he has to be the Dafilia. The Torah is kilu, it's testifying that a Klicheres will never ever be able to get the Bluyas out. So a Gola is worthless for a Klicheres. However, the Gemara does say in Maseches Pesachim, even though Hagola is worthless for a Klicheres, Libun is effective for a Klicheres. The Gemara just says that sometimes it's not such a great idea. Sometimes it's not so practical to do Libun with a Klicheres. The Gemara draws the following distinction. The Gemara says that if you take a Klicheres and you try to do Libun on it, but you're very, very careful to do it in such a way that the Kli is not going to break, so then that's always sleep, and that's not going to work. Because the Rabbanu were afraid that if the guy's always looking carefully and trying to measure, he's got his thermometer in the klicheres to make sure he doesn't overheat the klicheres, so then there's a gezeira that you may not do a good job with it. So Gemara says, therefore, that kind of libun is not going to be effective. But if you really do a real makoy, you do a real super duper duper klicheres libun, that you see the guy is willing to risk the klicheres. That's what the Gemara says in Zvachim, you master with kashonis. The Gemara says, so you throw a mamish back into the fire, into the furnace. So the Gemara says, that's good. That stacha would be good. That would be good, not only midatari, that would be good even midirabban. So you see clearly from the Gemara that even though Hagola is not effective, that's a tariq of the Gemara, and Hagola is not effective, but Libun would be effective. So again, our starting point in the city was, if it's through water, then it gets out through water. If it's through fire, then it gets out through fire. So we saw the Heter Bola, the rules are different, and now the rules are very different. When it comes to klicheres, so then the libun is the only thing that's possible. No matter how the bli it was, you're going to have to go down the route of libun. How does libun work? How does Chazal figure out that libun works? If the Torah is me'ida, she'ena yaitzei. If the Torah says that the blias don't come out, so how in the world does libun work? How does libun solve the problem? The marusha, the mitzvah says that the blias don't come out, so how in the world can the Gemara tell us that libun is effective? That's a big machlokes in Rishonim. So it's this dilemma that led some Rishonim to the conclusion that we misunderstood what Libun is all about. That Libun is not a way to get an Isser out. It's not a way to remove a Bliya by dragging it out, by pulling it out, because that's not going to be effective, because the Torah either that just doesn't work. The Bliya is so shakua in, it's just not going to work. So what does Libun do? It does something totally different. It surfaces the Isser bim Kaimai. It destroys the Isser. It doesn't draw out the Isser. It destroys the Isser. It surfaces the Isser bim Kaimai. Okay, so that'll work. Because that'll work even by klicheres. If you go down the route of libun, so even though the bliya was ayedei mayim, just to superimpose more water in it, that's not going to do the trick. If you're going with a fire, then the fire's going to go in. Mamish burn the thing out. It's command delay, so that's going to be okay. That's what the ra'ah explains. That's the nature of libun, different from hagol. We spoke a little bit about this idea that libun is surface isim koimo. This explains another phenomenon. When we spoke a little bit about the sugyas of Chamik Tosu Cham Kulo, we started to talk about it a little bit. I think we said we'll talk about it when we get the Hashakim, so we're here. Okay, so we're going to talk about it for a minute. So there was a big machlekes in Rishonim, everyone should hopefully remember, about Chamik Tosu Cham Kulo b'Mateches. The original din of Chamik Tosu Cham Kulo appears in Maseches Pesachim by the roasting of the Korban Pesach. The Gemara says you have to be careful not to use a metal spit to roast the Korban Pesach, because the metal spit's going to start to get hot, and then the metal's going to heat up, and the metal's going to conduct the heat, and then the metal itself is going to be cooking up the meat surrounding it, and that's going to be a problem, because the Torah says it has to be tzliyesh, it can't be tzli, machmas, dabar acher. So come, some of the Rishonim made a parrot and said, oh, you see from here, chamik tasu cham kulo. So that has implications for your day also. So if you remember about the spoon, that was made a parrot's famous chumrah, that if you stick a milk spoon into a fleshy pot, so it's not enough just to be mishar shishim of what went into the pot. To be mishar shishim connecting the entire spoon. So all the other shav disagreed with many parents. We got two reasons why they disagree. Either bli is different, or maybe it's liash is different. Different nuances in the Rishonim. Why we don't necessarily accept the rabbi parents. So in the middle of that whole discussion, so then the Rishonim start to talk about a related topic. About if you really believe in Chamik Tasu Cham Kulo, maybe you could use Chamik Tasu Cham Kulo to kasha kev also. That'd be a Gval Kukula. It means, why do I have to put the whole Kli into the fire? Why do I have to put the whole Kli into the water? I'll just do Chamik Tasu Cham Kulo. Does that make any sense? Can you even think of doing Chamik Tasu Cham Kulo in order to kasha kev? So the Shach, in the Simon about, did we talk about it then? I don't remember. So the Shach quotes this idea that maybe there's a big preference. Maybe that to apply Chamik Tasu Cham Kulo to Libun, that's very problematic, because if the whole idea is surface isim kumbo, So it's not drawing things out. It's not pulling things. It's not transferring things. It's destroying things. So where the fire is touching, it's touching. Where the fire is not touching, it's not touching. It's a whole comment says, I'm cool. Wouldn't make any sense when it comes to Liban. So the Shach quotes this discussion. But this is all assuming that that's what Liban is. It's assuming that Liban really fundamentally is destroying something in its place. So other Rishonim disagree. The Rabbeinu Tosfos quotes from Rabbeinu Tam that the reason why Liban works for Cheres is a totally different story. Rabbeinu Tam says that Liban works for Cheres because it's Panim Chedoshes Bolakan, because it's something new. It's the, how do you make a Kli Cheres? You throw it into the furnace. So here I threw it into the furnace. I didn't throw it literally into the furnace. I threw it into the something. I threw it into the fire. I threw it into the barbecue grill. I threw it with their coals, with this fire, with this flames. So that's Kiva made a brand new Kli. So once I make a brand new Kli, so then there's no problem anymore. What exactly is that? So I made a brand new Kli. So there's no, why is that? Okay, well, how does that solve the problem? The blees are still there. What is the making of the Kli? So I understand somehow, let's say, Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. If you have a Kli and you break it and you make it over again, so that's a brand new Kli. Whereas over here, so I made a new Kli. Now I made a new Kli, which has the same problem as the old Kli. So it's hard to understand exactly what Rabbeinu Tam is driving at. According to your eye, I understand that the Yis is not here anymore, but according to Rabbeinu Tam, the Yis is here, but it's still Mutter. So it's hard exactly to understand what that's based on. But whatever it is, those are different approaches in the Rishonim. Why? Lamai sets it in. Halach is that Liban does work on Cheres. There are other times when it becomes not 100% clear whether we should be doing Liban on something, whether we should be doing Hagola on something. We started out by saying the Mishnah says it's very obvious. If you used it for fire, then you got to do Liban. If you use it for water, you got to do Maya. What if you use it for both? What if you have a Kli that you use for both types of usages? So what should it be? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, well, you have to use the Momachim one. So you have to do a Liban on it. So that's what some Rishonim say. So one day in Tosfos says. The other day, Tosfos says, no, that there's a klal luchas kashering, when some Rishonim have held exist, and Rishonim never heard of, that's called Yago Basa Rof Tashmisha. So if you have a Kli that's used most of the time in a certain manner, so then you have a right to kasher it according to that manner. So what would that mean? So if you have a Kli that most of the time I use a Kli for water, but every once in a while I use it directly up to the fire. So one day, Tosfos says that it would be okay, mikra din, you can kasher with water. There's a blia of Asian, it doesn't matter. Where did Tosfos dream this idea from? So there's a whole sugya about this that appears in Masechet Pesachim. The whole story about kashering knives. The Gemara has a shaila that of Tosfos Masechet Pesachim. How do you kasher knives for Pesach? So the Gemara has a total back and forth. Did you have gold? Did you leave one? How do you go ahead and kasher knives? There's the maskana of the Gemara is that you do a derech hagola, that a knife just requires a hagola. So the problem is there's a tesefta that says that knives require a libun. So all Rishon bothered, how do you resolve that problem? So that's what Tosfos starts talking about. The one derech in Tosfos says is that knives usually require libun because they use sometimes on the fire. They would use them to flip burger and something on the fire. The only reason why the Gemara Pesachim lets you get away with haroschin is because it's for Pesach, and this is Tosfos Raya, that chametz is a terabola. So that's one solution to the problem. But then Tosfos quotes another solution. Maybe there are different kinds of knives. That maybe there are small knives and there are big knives. So small knives, you never use directly on the fire, but if you have a big knife, then you may use that on the coals. You may use that to flip the burgers, flip the meat on the coals itself. So if every once in a while you're going to use that knife on the fire, that's what the Gemara means. Is that such a knife, that's what the Sefta means, such a knife would require a libun. So that day in Tosfos is assuming that if you have something that's every once in a while used in the fire, even though most of the time you don't, most of the time it's used on the table, it's used not in the context of the fire, so apapichein, that's what the Sefta means, that it would require libun. So that's already a chiddush, that's already a big chiddush, that you have a knife that's sometimes used one way, sometimes used another way, most of the time it's used Hagolim. Once in a while, it's used the Liban, requires Liban, that's already a big Chiddush. That's a big Bechlekes and Rishonim. Is there such a klal of Kashrut called Yigo Basa Rof Tashmisho? Even assuming that this is correct, that there is such a klal, that you follow Rof Tashmisho, is that a klal Mideraisa? It means if you want to use you want a Kashrut Kli within 24 hours. We all know that our Kashrut is killed today, it's not Mideraisa. If we know it's Kashrut killed Mideraisa, all our Kashrut is all Mideraisa, because everything is ready, Eina Ben Yomo. So let's say Liyotzu, a guy would want to kasher something, Mamash Midaraisa. He's planning on kashering, well, he just trafed it up an hour ago on the grill, and he wants to kasher it now. So he looks at this kli and he says, well, 95% of the time I've been using this kli for water, for a tray for things in the pot, and every once in just 5 minutes ago I use it for the fire, so I can apply the rule of Rav Tashmisha. So we just say that according to those we've shown him, Rav Tashmisha was okay even with their Isa. So many say not that the Rashba says, no, that's out of the question. You can't say such a thing. How only work could Rav Tashmisha work with their Isa? And Lamaisa has got a blia of Aish in it, so what is Rav Tashmisha? It must be that this whole cool of Rav Tashmisha, if it even exists, only makes sense after 24 hours. See, after 24 hours, the whole thing is not with their Isa, the whole thing is with their Abot of Hakriva. But the Chavu is saying that we want to make life easier for you. So if it's a kli that's usually used in the water, they use it in the kasher to the water. Kli Yitzri, this would have been a real problem with their Isa, and we never would have let you get away with this story of just this game, which is doing Rav Tashmisha. At the end of the day, none of this really matters for us. That meaning is we don't like to align this anyway. We assume there are more rights. You don't even want to follow Rav Tashmisha. So if at any time you have a kli that you know was used, Allah A, you say after kasher, leave it anyway. So we're not expecting to on this. But within that world of those who show him all Rav Tashmisha, so one can argue that even those who show him agree that it's only Pekashim is the Midirabban. If Pekashim would be their Isa, then the Heta wouldn't apply. So again, so we have our basic halacha that the Mishnah, the Gemara described, the Sagola versus the Imun. We know pretty much when you need one, when you need the other, but sometimes it's not so clear. So Heterabala throws things off a little bit, Lakula. Cheres throws things off a little bit, Lachumra. Rav Tashmisha, according to some, throws things off also a little bit, Lekula. But now we have to try to figure out what exactly do the words mean. When do we say there was a Tashmishai de Eish, and when was there a Tashmishai de Hamayim? So 99% of the time, it's pretty clear. If you're cooking a pot of soup, fleshik soup, and you stick your milchik thing in, so that's a kli that requires a goal. If you take your milchik. Have milk burger flip or something, but let's say you have your milk grill or something, and you throw a hot dog, you have the hot dog on the milk grill, the flames are coming up. So everybody agrees that's idea H, and that would of course require a limon. So 99% of the time it's pretty clear. But every once in a while it becomes not so clear whether something is considered to be a bli idea H, a bli idea mine, is leave inappropriate or is idol appropriate. So the major case that the Rishon discussed, I think we spoke a little bit about frying, and we talked about the machlekes, and Ben Yol and his son, and the Rav Yonah, Ben Yol, right? When did we talk about it? I forgot already. At some point, somewhere along the way. So the Rush quotes in the Sefer Berachot Maseches Pesachim, there was a big machlokes, father and son, about how to kasher frying pans. You have to kasher frying pans, not for Liban, okay, kasher frying pans through Hagolah. So the Rush quotes from the Rav Yah that he held with such a double portion that it requires Hagolah, he never bothered asking his father about it. His father was a Bnei Yah. And then the Rav Yoh writes that after his father died, so one of the Tamidim told him that his father held the after kasher through Liban. So he never understood why his father said that. He never had the opportunity to ask him. Because all the years he was growing up, he thought it was such a nosa of shita. What they did in the house, I can't tell you, because they never tripped up their frying pans. So the Rav Yoh held that it was pashut b'hagola, and many y'all thought that maybe it requires Liban. But what's the shaila? Why should it need a Liban? So the Rav Yoh is not sure. He's trying to analyze what his father must have held. He said maybe his father was concerned that when you use the frying pan, even though it's clearly a liquid there, that's what you find. If you don't use a liquid, it's not going to work. So there's some oil there. Maybe the Rabbi Yol was concerned that the oil is going to dry up in the process of the frying. So it's going to turn out that there's no real liquid there. Then it's potentially like a grill. So then you need a liban. So that's like a bleh de ha'esh. So Rabbi Yol says that he taught him to believe that. Because then we should be chashmei every pot, every time you cook. Maybe there's not so much liquid left. So we know lo shemana dava zemiyadim. So he's still not sure what the answer is. So mistama, what Rabbi Yoh held was that the liquid that's there is not all that significant because it's not cooking mamish in water. It's a little bit of oil in the bottom of the pot. So mistama, that's not considered to be so significant. That's close to the amount of eish, and that would require liquid, and it wouldn't suffice with hagol. Mistama, that's Rabbi Yoh held. That nakuda, that Rabbi Yoh disagree with. So the Rush quotes back and forth that this touches now on a general question about where frying fits into the Bishul Eish equation. So this is something we have spoken about. Shabbos, we spoke a lot about it. We spoke about it in Yom Kippur. Also, the Raya is back and forth. Everyone starts to bring Raya back and forth what the story is with the frying. At the end of the day, how do we pass in the halacha? At the end of the day, the Tashas that's coming to Toskim is that we're not sure. So we don't know the answer to this question. We're not sure whether whether the front bin really needs a goal or really needs a libut. So therefore, why don't you try to be machmer in this? So if you have a frying pan that became treif, so you should do liban on it. The only exception to this would be if it would be a frying pan that was a terabola. So if it's a terabola, as we said before, one of the extensions of the principle of a terabola is that if, even though it may have bli as a bas b'chalav in it, if the bas b'chalav would never wouldn't put it for hours of each other, that's also considered to be a terabola. So if that's the case, so then such a frying pan, even if the Raniol is right, such a frying pan you would still be able to get away with that bola. So it's to this that the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Pshar, most of the poskim seem to assume this is what the Shulchan Aruch is driving at, is that the Shulchan Aruch quotes the following Pshara in Yerdeya. He says that if you have a shayla about a frying pan and it became treif, you use it for chazan by mistake, you use it for bas b'chol, it wouldn't 24 hours by mistake, so we're not going to let you get away with the Rav Yom. And just capture it with that. Allah would even insist on leaving. However, if you have another tzad l'hokel, then we'll be willing to negotiate. What would be the other tzad l'hokel? Let's say you want to kasher a frying pan for Pesach. So if you want to kasher a frying pan for Pesach, let's not forget that half three shayin of hell, that even came that a mamash b'liyadeh, mamash b'liyadeh, kasher with hagola. So we don't like to do that. We're chayshish for the Ramban and Shmuelot. We're chayshish that chomitz is yisur of Allah. So we're chayshish not to do just to get away with hagola. We'll just don't leave one. But here, the pashas in the Shulchan Aruch is, it's a shtibble sveik sveika. If you want to kasher a frying pan for Pesach, so then there are grounds to be made for derech hagola. Why is that? Because maybe all frying pans need hagola. Maybe Rabbi Yol was not correct, and we pass it like Rabbi Yol, that even a tray for frying pan is good enough with hagola. That's suffix number one. And suffix number two is that maybe chometz is a terabola. So if chametz is a terabola, even if Rabbi Yol is right, Pesach, he's still not going to be right. So therefore, a bit zero for these couple of things. So we have a right to be a little bit more meg. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. That's the way most of the later poskim interpreted this seeming pshara, this compromise of the Shulchan Aruch. So it comes out lemaisa that according to the Pesach and Shulchan Aruch would be acceptable to kasher for Pesach a frying pan idea hagol. This whole application to modern day frying pans becomes very, very problematic for a few reasons. First of all, Liban is not even an option on the frying pans today because they're coated with Teflon. So you can do Liban on it, all things are going to get destroyed. It's going to melt. So that's not. I don't think practically you could do Liban. So the only way possible to kasher the frying pans would be to do Hagol. The only problem is that we're not so excited about relying on this machloikis between Rav Yoh and Rav Yoh with Manazer, because the whole reason why the Rav Yoh thought that frying maybe is like Hagol, it's a sophic a little bit, maybe it's like Hagol. That was only because there was oil there. You're using a real amount of oil. Today, a lot of frying is done without any oil altogether. It's these, what are they called? The stick to where they just throw
Teflon,
you know,
that's
what I'm saying. You spray a little...
spray a little ham
on it or something. This is garnish. That's nothing. So it's... The stump, even the Rav Yom would agree that that's nothing. That's what the modern day post can write. That the machlekes harishanim about frying almost doesn't apply bizmanaseh, because if it's deep fried, it's mamish soaking, it's drowning in French fries and donuts and oils. And anybody say that's not called bishul. So about that's called bishul. About that's called a day nayim, shem, whatever it is. Whereas if it's just a little bit of a spritz of on the frying pan or something, so that's also a garnish. So that everyone would agree is mamish abli aydei eish. The old way of frying, I guess people still do sometimes, but the old way of frying is there's a frying pan full of oil. And the stuff inside the frying pan, so that is not as common anymore. And the original machlokes was probably only about that middle kind of case. So at the end of the day, if you want a kasher or a frying pan, it's not as that. If it's yisur abalos, then forget. Then you can't kasher. It's for machmir, it requires libun. And even according to Rav Yom, maybe it requires libun v'zman hazeh. And you can't do libun, everything teflon is not shach to libun on, so you have to throw it out. If it's you want to use the same frying pan for chametz, if you want to use your chametz a frying pan, so then also it's not so partial, because the whole reason why we're making on the chametz frying pan is that it's a sveik sveika, that maybe Rav Yoh is right, but if our frying is not even subject to the Rav Yoh's statement, so then who says that would be acceptable? The only time we can possibly salvage our frying pans is the bas b'chol. You have a frying pan and say you wanted to keep power or something, now it became fleishix, so then it's still considered to be a terabala. So if a terabala, mikra adin, hagol would really be good. So mikra adin, hagol would tacha be good on frying pans under those circumstances. Okay, so we got a little bit of an overview as to the basic law in terms of libra prasagola, but again, we've seen a lot of possible exceptions to the rule. Let's try now to take each one of these processes, agola libra, and try just to understand just the mechanics, how they work, what things one's supposed to be careful about in terms of kashering. So when it comes to hagala, what's the basic definition of hagala? So the Gemara has in Maseches Pesachim the fact that it has to be a kli rishon. You have to heat up the water. It's got to be a kli rishon. What exactly does a kli rishon mean? This is a big throwback to what we should be familiar with. So we know that there are two kinds of kli rishon. There's a kli rishon agabi aish. There's a kli rishon shelo agabi aish. What exactly is the status of these two kli kalim? Much like this, the Pashas Advarim and all the Bavlis is that there's no real difference between the two. That any time the halacha requires kli rishon, when the halacha requires kli rishon, let's say for the purpose of being called bishul b'shabbes, when the halacha requires kli rishon to bishul for maybe nav bushel or something, you can't kashi, whatever your definition of kli rishon is. So the simple meaning in the Gemara is that there's no difference whether it's a gabi eish or shlo gabi eish. That's the simple meaning of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Masechta Shabbos in the third prayer. So an ulbus vakadeirish. If you're merusachim, you need to be tavlin. If you have a frying pan, or you have a pot that was on the fire, and now it's shavirim merusach. It's off the fire now, and you want to throw raw food in, you want to throw tavlin in. So the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do that. So the pasha bar means you're not allowed to do it with the raisa because it's still considered to be mevashel. There was this cryptic Yerushalmi floating around that at least some Achmarim thought that that's not true. That the only time something is called the Kli Rishon, Minat Torah is only if it's Agabia Eish Mamish. The fact that the Mishnah says that you can't cook raw food in a Kli Rishon that's off the fire, that was at worst only a Chumar Midirabana. So that was at least the way some read the Yerushalmi, that's what some claim the Rambam holds, Chashuva claims the Rambam holds that way, that all the applications of Bishul in a Kli Rishon, Shalom Agabia Eish, are only midrabbanan, because the Torah doesn't really accept this idea of a kli rishon shelo agabi aish. Again, there was a highly questionable whether the Yerushalmi even said that. That was the famous line of Yerushalmi, also a chokol kli rishon, which after Chavurim then understood to mean that the whole kli rishon shelo agabi aish is a harchokol, the whole thing is a siyah, with the rice it's only agabi aish. And the other after Chavurim said, no, also a chokol means, what if it's less than yatza lettuce bulbs? And then when machin, right, there's all chazar, everyone remembers this, right? No? What? Yeah, that was the second half. That was the second half of the Yerushalmi, the two parts of the Yerushalmi. So according to half the Achronim, the Yerushalmi has the Shita, which some claim the Rambam accepted, that the Kli Rishon Shelo Agabi Eish is only mid the Rabbanan. How would this question play out in terms of kashering? So let's say if I have something that has Bliya Al Gabi Eish, so then if you hold that, let's say I stirred my children with a milchik spoon, now, if I want to kasher it, so I'll take that spoon and throw it into a kli rishon shelo agabi aish. According to the Ram, that doesn't exist. According to the Ram, the Torah doesn't accept such a thing. How could that serve for kashering? So if you hold there's a real difference between kli rishon agabi aish and kli rishon shelo agabi aish, what's the right, what's the rabbanon, it's inconceivable to kasher with kalim when they're off the fire. So when the Gemara says that hilchasa be kli rishon, so kli rishon must mean a real super duper, real true blue kli rishon, maybe agabi aish. What about according to those Rishonim, the way the Ran says that the Bavli rejects that Rishonim, and the way most of the Rishonim seem to assume that there's real bona fide bishul and a kli rishon with the Raisa, and that's what the people got him how to stick on the fire on the Gemara and giving Kolobosar, right? The guy was bringing the Bosar and the Gvina, right? Remember the Begler, right? In fact, we gave Bosar Chol days. So according to the Pashta Dvarim is that bishul is the Raisa, even Shalog Abiyahish. If that's the case, so then would that be sufficient for kashering as well? So could I kasher something if it's a kli rishon even if it's a long avyoish? So maybe one could argue that would be all right. So the Ran writes that he doesn't think that would be true. The Ran writes that even if you hold that in hilchos bishul b'shabbes and hilchos bishul bas b'cholov and kolot arakula that the standards of kli rishon apply equally to Gabiesh, low Gabiesh, and Kashering, they're going to break down. Why? Because in Kashering, argues around, there's another fact. It has to be, man. What is that? The three magic words, Kibbalah, Kach, Balto. That it has to be the same. It's got to be not just that it's Halach, Likli, Rishon, but it has to mimic, it has to be identical to the way the B'liya took place. So even though it's true that in Dukh's Bishol, Rishon, Gabiesh, Chai, Stila, for it, you know, created this Abbas, Machav, Dirais, that's all the characteristics of Bishol, but at the end of the day, it's still not the same. It's not identical to Gabiesh. It has to always be a gabi aish in order to mimic the Kabbalah Kapoto. So unless the bliya was shlo gabi eish, if the bliya took place shlo gabi eish, okay, then the kashrin can be shlo gabi eish also. But if the bliya, like most of the time, was al gabi eish, then the kashrin has to be al gabi eish as well. So this is important. Some people don't pay attention to this. But the kasha things, so they'll heat up a big pot of kasha things, and then they want to start throwing things into the pot, so they don't want to get burned. So they'll turn the fire off. And they just, now it's only klibish togabesh. According to Rishal, for sure it's no good. And even according to the Batli, the Ran claims it's not going to be good. So that's probably not such a good idea to do. Unless one disagrees with the Ran. That's what holds like other Rishal. So Tosfos, in a couple of places, seems to disagree with the Ran. Tosfos seems to assume that if you hold that something has a din like a Kli Rishon, even if it's not literally on the fire, that would also be good. That's what Tosfos mentioned about Eroi. And the discussion of the Rishon about Eroi, so everyone should remember this, the Fira Machlokes of Rishon, where the Eroi is nothing, it's the Rashbam Shita, or Eroi is everything, like Tosfos Gavim Kvot, Eroi is Mamshah, or Eroi is somewhere in the middle, like Rabbeinu Tam, who says that Eroi is Mavashal Kadei Kalipa. So Tosfos, with all that discussion, talked about the possibility of kashering things to Eroi. So Tosfos quotes, that was the steam of Rabbeinu Tam. Remember, in one place, Tosfos quotes in one opinion from Rabbeinu Tam that said that if you really hold that Eroi is Klirisha, which the other version of Rabbeinu Tam didn't hold it. But if you hold like that Tosfos Zvachim, you hold like that one version of Rabbeinu Tam, that Eroi is Mamish Mamish Klirisha, the Tosfos says, Kasha through Eroi. Even though Eroi, by definition, is not on the fire anymore. Obviously, you see that Tosfos didn't buy into this round. Tosfos said that as long as halachically it's called the Klirisha, that's good enough. The din of Kavod Kapalta just means you have to mimic the halacha category. It's enough to mimic the exact same physical characteristics. That's the point that is in the Ran, again, assuming against the Rambam, assuming that Klirisha Shaloga Be'esh is halachically the same, would that suffice in terms of kashrus? We try not to rely on that. We kashrus, we want to kashrus. Well, holidays. You can turn the fire, you want to keep the fire on. As the Gemara says, Vilchasa, Yidibidi Bekli Bekli Rishon. Even though we're not going to, there's no way we're going to kash lechachila shloga beheish, and for sure we're not going to kash beheiroi, that would be a really bad thing to do. Something that had a blia with a Kli Rishon, we're never going to let you get away with an Eroi for that, because forgetting about the Ran, we have much more serious problems with that. We're not even sure that Eroi is really like a Kli Rishon. I mean, we're machmet like a Kli Rishon, no Shabbos. No one's going to make tea in, using Eroi Kli Rishon. Most people don't do that, except the Rashbam. Some people with the Evan, but we're not sure that it's Dinuk Kli Rishon. If anything, the Shach passes the Kufay, and Shapur quotes the Shach Baloch, and it's only Mevashal for the Klipa. So again, not everyone agree. There are different opinions. Is it Mevashal Makula for the Klipa or not at all? But to turn around Makula, go ahead and say a Klida that a Bliya Derech Kli Rishon, you get Kasher with Eroi, that's out of the question. If that would be true, that would make, if you can Kasher with Eroi, that would make life so much easier. Just take everything and put it under the urn. Just take a tea kettle and start pouring around your pots. It'll make life much easier. But we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that either because of the Ran's concern that it has to be Kabbalah Kabbalah, or because of the other, or because we're far from convinced that Eroi has the status like a Kli Rishon. So that's not going to be a good option for a kasher. The only way we're going to use Eroi to kasher is if the Bliya was the Eroi in the first place. That's okay. That's what the Gemara talks about. That if the Kli only got a Bliya through X, Y, and Z, so then Kabbalah Kapalta would permit you to kasher it that way as well. But short of that, we're not going to permit a kashering derech Eroi. Sometimes we're not even sure exactly whether something had a Bliya through the Kli Rishon or through an Eroi. We spoke a lot about the sinks. That was the machlokes of Sapolsky about how to kasher sinks. I want a kasher tray for sink. I want a kasher chomisik for sink. So is it enough just to use Eroi? Just take a pot of water, tea kettle, and pour it all over the sink? Or do I have to create a sink, turn the sink into a Kli Rishon? So who remembers? That was Machlokes Sfunu. That was Yechazitza, the Chazanish, and the whole story about. Because the question is, when the water is coming out of the faucet, is that Eroi Kli Rishon, or is that Kli Rishon Mamish? So we thought that most of the Pulse were of the opinion that Eroi Kli Rishon, the Kli Rishon is the boiler on the bottom. So in your basement, if you would want to let's say you wash Chometz dishes inside the boiler, now you want to use that for Pesach, that would be a problem. Most people are doing that. So by the time the water's coming out of the boiler, went through the pipes, and it'll come through the faucet, that's at worst Eroi Kli Rishon. So by the time it hits the sink, that's Eroi Kli Rishon. So if it became trade for Eroi Kli Rishon, I could cash with the Eroi Kli Rishon. Take a tea kettle, boil up the tea kettle, and then pour it all over the sink, and that should be okay. The only problem is that if you hold that the sink was a kli mishum mamish, then that's not going to be effective. That's what the Minchas Yitzchok held. That sink is mamish a kli mishum. That's what the Chazon Ish of the Shabbos seemed to say also. Because remember the Chazon Ish is Chumrah, that the only time something is, you break the connection to the kli mishum is only if it's physically broken. Let's say, if I have a pot of water sitting on the fire and I just tip the pot over and I pour it into a cup, so that's not called Iri kli mishum, that's called kli mishum mamish. It means the water, when it lands into the cup, since the pot is never taken off the fire, it's all the chubah to the flame. So anything in the cup is light that considered to be part of kli mishum. That's why according to the Chazon Ish, you always want to be behind. Whenever you want to make tea on Shabbos, anything on Shabbos, you always have to add another cup, because whenever you put something under the urn, that's always a problem. So we said that if the boiler is on at any time when you are using the sink in the last 12 months for chametz, so then when the water is coming out of the through the pipes and it's still the boiler still on, so that water that's coming out is still kli mishum. Well, it's not even kli mishum. It's kli mishum mamish. When it hits the sink, that's vayta kli mishum. So if it's vayta kli mishum, then you get this kasher and turning the sink on, unless you know the boiler's on also. If you know the boiler's on, then the mamish will be okay. If you don't know the boiler's on when you're kashering, so then that'll be a problem. So you have to figure out another way to capture this. Anyway, again, so it's when the Gemara uses the phrase uchas kli rishon, you have to make sure that you have a real bona fide kli rishon on your hands when you're actually kashering. And the Gemara has another klal. The Gemara says in Pesachim, when it talks about kashering those knives, when all the dust settles on the knives, the Gemara says uchas idi beroschen. So the Gemara uses the phrase beroschen. The question is, what does roschen mean? What does the word roschen mean? So does roschen mean mamish boiling? But it's also just a code phrase saying Yatzalenizbo. So we spoke about that on the Shabbos also. The Mishnah uses the phrase that So there was some Rishonim in the Mordechai, right, who said that the only time it's a problem is if it's mamish roseach. If it's mamish boiling, then you can't put the raw spices in. But if it's just the Yatzalenizbo, what's the big deal, says the Mordechai. He says, Yatzalenizbo, what? It doesn't have the ability to cook anything. The Gemara says in Shabbos that the shear of Yatza Lettuce is the shear of how hot water has to get to be called cooked. If I take cold water, put it on the pot on the fire, and it reaches Yatza Lettuce, that's called Bishul. That's Bishul Derais. That's the shear Bishul. Solid foods have the shear of Mechem and Jusoy, and liquids have the shear of Yatza Lettuce. At least water has the shear of Yatza Lettuce. So the Mordechai says, yeah, that's the shear for how hot the liquid has to get in order to be called cooked. In order for the liquid to be able to cook other things, it's got to be much hotter than that. Just 110 degrees is not going to do the job. It's not going to cook up raw spices. So it's got to be really, really hot. How hot is that? It's got to be mamish bubbling. Got to be really, really boiling. So we don't possibly quote the last year that all the Pokemon don't accept this Mordechai. We assume that the washer in the Mishnah, roschen, is lavdafka. Roschen just means if it's a yatz lettuce, but that's also. So however, that same shadow should carry over the kashrut also. We're also using the phrase veroschen. So does roschen mean mamish boiling? But does roschen just mean yatzal lettuce boil? So we hukas shabbos for machmir, hukas kashrut for machmir. We assume the halacha that roschen means boiling. It's not enough just that it should be yatzal lettuce. It can't kashrut with 110 degrees. We assume it's got to be much, much hotter than that. We assume there's got to be literally roschen. So what's called roschen? When it's bubbling. So when you start to see it bubbling, some boski have a chumrah that it should be mamish bubbling, like cold drilling. See the bubbles in the whole pot because the way it starts to bubble up, it's a little bubbles on the top. So some posting on the Psalach Hatchila, you should wait till there are a lot of bubbles. I don't know. I'm not sure what point you say there are a lot of bubbles, little bubbles and stuff. You see it bubbling, so that's good enough. Maybe it's a good idea to wait a little bit because the Rishonim point out that when you kasha things, if you kasha one thing, you throw the spoon into the pot, and sure, you'll kasha and finish. But you throw in 20 spoons, so then you may cool down the water in the process. So by the time you get to the 15th spoon, so the water may already have dipped beneath the point of roschen. So the post can say, you have to be careful. If you throw things into a pot, so if you throw too many kalim in, you have to make sure to leave them there and keep it until the water starts to reboil again. So it's probably a better idea to wait until the water is really, really seriously boiling. Again, I don't know enough about the physics, but you should wait till it's a gesunta boil, and then you can throw the stuff in. And anyway, you probably not going to take the stuff out so fast because it's going to be hard to get your fingers in there anyway. So you're probably going to wait a little bit. We spoke in Bas Mechalov about the Mechlekes and Rishonim when you kash a kelim. Is it a good idea to get them out as fast, or is it a better idea to leave them in for longer? So yesh v'yesh, depending on what you thought. So we usually assume we should try to keep them in there for a little bit of time. So make sure that at least the water is boiling throughout the process of the kashering. when we kasha with Hagola, so again, we have to be careful that it's a Kli Rishon, and we have to be careful that it's that's Rosin, and we have to be careful that we're using water also. In contrast to what? What if I want to use other liquids? So the Gemara has a whole discussion about this in Masechet Zvachim. It's just unclear what the Gemara says. The Gemara talks about using other liquids when it comes to Mariko Shtifa. There's a lot of oldness about this, about whether Mariko Shtifa is basically kashrin or Mariko Shtifa is basically a mitzvah. There's a long little repair about this. Now, what exactly the relationship between the two is. But in the middle of that sugya, so the Gemara has something about if you wanted kasha kalim with using oil, using wine, using other kinds of liquids, whether that would be acceptable or not. So we usually assume that that's not such a great idea. Machlokes Rishonim when that works, and the mice, we don't like to do that. There's a machlokes Apelskim also about whether you can use steam to gash. When the halacha requires a liquid, so do we say that steam is H2O? It's all the same stuff, it's a little bit different state. Makes you pretty use ice. If you want to use steam, so maybe that's also okay. And others say, no, there's this cheshbainus, that's the gash like the old stuff. We've been kashering for 3,000 years. You have to use wood, rope, should be lion, and steam wouldn't be good. So some factories have these issues. Again, we try the chachila that we don't do any of these kinds of funny kashering. We kash everything just with water, and not with steam, not with liquids, not with anything else. We try the chachila to be able to hold the opinions. We have to do it through water.
Is the roof we make it something like a sink that we assume the urethane is all that's needed so you can use steam? Or?
Steam work to capture
what steam work?
Like
so the question is, does the countertop need capturing altogether? That's the question. We spoke about that. Now. It could be the countertop that doesn't need anything.
Right.
So it doesn't need anything. That's the whole of the album to do.
Anything
really that Golo, we shouldn't probably shouldn't. It's a shot. It's a steam. Okay. When we speak about the kashrut of Hagola, so there's a big problem we've talked about several times already. The big dilemma that we should have, whenever you kashrut Hagola, you're always running into a potential problem. The problem is that as you're getting something out, so then it's going to come right back in again. So is that a problem? Is that not a problem? So we had a big machlokes says in the Ramban, whether that's even a problem altogether. So the Ramban is every shenem held that this problem never existed. Tosafos spends lines and lines, whole tosafos of all of Shas to try to figure out how to solve this problem, that Hassan Rishon said the cloud doesn't exist. But assuming that there is such a problem, assuming there's an issue of what comes out, and again, how would you even dream of getting around this problem? So Tosafos gives you a few different aids how to get around the problem. So one aid that Tosafos says is that if you wait until after things are in the binyomo, that's going to solve the world's problems. Why exactly is that going to solve the world's problems? So Tosafos explains that once the clear is in the binyomo, so the tam is going to come out into the water, is going to become now a nice and time of God, which the ether is not really a problem altogether, and therefore it's not going to pose a new problem. Why is it not going to pose a new problem? It's going to go right back into the spoon again. So why isn't that a problem? It's not a problem, it's not a problem, but the Rabban is still a problem, the Manushach. If you say that it's not a problem altogether, whatever nice time of God is, hetagom, if you would hold that way, so then why are you kashering it in the first place? Ella, you're concerned about the nice and time of God, manachum, and the Rabbanon, so then it's the same exact, you gain nothing. Your spoon used to have a nosen dam of gam. A minute before you kash it, it had more than 24 hours anyway. So it had a nosen dam of gam inside it. And now a minute after you kash it, it has a nosen dam of gam inside it because whatever came out just right back in again. So why in the world is there a difference? So obviously, Tosafos is saying is that there's a big difference. Because before you kash it, so even though right now it's nosen dam of gam, but it was tchiv al l'shevach. Means the original bliya that went in went l'shevach. So the issim of the rabban, chum of the rabban of gzeir, shenah ben yomot ben yomot, the gzeir Tosafos understood was that anything that started out as a nosen tam l'shvach, so now if time passes and it becomes a nosen tam l'gam, so that retains its problem with the rabban. That's the chum of the rabban. That's the gzeir of the rabban at the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, gzeir of kedeir shenah ben yomot ben yomot. But that's only true if it was tchilas abliyah l'shevach. If the tchilas abliyah was l'gam, so then b'chi agavra l'gozru, that's nosen tam l'gam, neveir shenah ben yomot. Not a problem with their eyes, and not a problem with their abundance also. That's not what she gained, according to Tosafos. I'm taking the bliya. Midrash Torah is not a problem anyway, but midrash abundance it's still a problem because it's part of the original bliya that was last week l'shevach. I'm taking it out of the spoon, throwing it into the water, and shooting it right back into the. It's the same exact time. 1 second has passed. Nothing changed. No, conceptually it changed. That when it comes into the spoon second time around, so the second time around is going in already as a tam pogum. So when something is tchivas abli alafgam, so b'chei gavin that was never included in the Yisad Rabbani. So it's mamash a game, but that's what Taisa says. That's what you're doing. That would be a good solution to this problem. And then Taisa says, what if you don't want to wait 24 hours? You want to cash it right away? So Taisa says, we'll give you another etza. You can invoke the principle of shishim. If you have a little spoon and you put a lot of water in, so that the tam's coming out. It's a nozer tam l'shemach. It's a great, delicious tasting nevelos and trefes and chazer floating around the water. But it becomes batel. So then when it comes back inside the spoon, so it's not a brasser anymore. So the tamshin is batel. But that would be okay. We spoke about this also. It's a lot of chazaria. So we spoke about this in the sugya. What? How can you do that? Isn't that a problem of what? So if you hold that's an issue, it's a disaster. So what was the Ron's famous teretz? It's not kavana what? Not kavana levatel, right? So then the whole ein vatnas lechil doesn't apply. This is the mocha for what? Strawberry smoothies. No? Anyone else strawberry smoothies today? Right? You just throw the strawberries with all the bugs and everything, throw them into the blender, and 2 seconds later, and you drink it. So you got loads of bugs floating around there, maybe. So what's the answer? The answer is that it's all losing its berryness. Like we're shooting around in the machine, we assume that all the berries are broken up. Again, all assuming that this metzius is correct. Test for us at some point. So if the berries are broken up, what right do I have to break up a berry? Like Gemara says in Gittin, if I have an egos, right? If I have an egos, that's a davar choshev. And it gets mixed in. One egos gets mixed into 200. One egos of oral gets mixed into 200 egos of davar mutar. So I can't just go ahead and crack the nuts. I'll crack all the nuts. So that'll be mevatel the chashiva shabo. So the Mishnah says no. It's a violation of mevatel the chachila. So you see that breaking up the davar chashiv is also considered to be in mevatel the chachila. So what right do I have to do it? So the answer is because I don't really want to eat the bugs. I'd much rather there were no bugs in the strawberries, but there are bugs in the strawberries. Maybe there are bugs in the strawberries. So that's cool, the ain't come out as business. So Tosfos gives you these two different answers how to get around this problem. So Tosfos is assuming there was a problem, which the Ramban says never existed altogether. Assuming there's a problem, if there's a problem, so how do we get around the problem? So we'll solve the world's problems either by invoking the principle of Nosan Tavu Gam, and with all the razzle-dazzle, Chilisa Zilu of Gam, or we'll invoke a Derech Vitl Bashisha, which is also going to be run into a potential problem. Next year, we'll try to figure out other races that solve this problem and to see just how serious this problem really is or is not in terms of cash. Okay, we'll stop here. Okay, so we have, I couldn't mess up one more show. All right, so we guys were out of this year. What's that face today? You guys, what, tomorrow? Guys, what, tomorrow or Thursday? Make a difference?